We're just going to have a look at how we engage the Bible, how we make sense of it, how we discover its meaning and its application. And we're going to take a look at that through the lens of 1 Peter chapter 1 and just the first couple of verses. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who are elect exiles of the dispersion in Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, in the sanctification of the Spirit, for obedience to Jesus Christ, and for sprinkling with his blood. May grace and peace be multiplied to you. You know, a lot of people treat their movies with more care than they do a Bible. And here's what I mean. Seldom would you find someone walking in and out of a movie theater sampling little pieces of the movie here and there with any reasonable hope of making sense of the characters or the plot line, right? You've got to sit through the thing from beginning to end to have any reasonable expectation of knowing what's going on. And yet, when it comes to the Bible, this is what many people do. They do sample just little bits and pieces here and there, ducking between this verse and that verse quite sporadically, and in the hope of finding what the Bible is actually communicating, in the hope of finding some insight and understanding and application of the Bible. What I want to put to you this morning is really just quite simply this. I want to put to you a way that we can read our Bibles better than random samplings, that we can have a better approach, a more faithful and more fruitful approach to the Bible to understand its meaning and application for our lives. And what I hope to discover with you this morning is, by way of example, by just showing how we do this, that we will find that the Bible is has historical context. It has humanly relatable roots, which need to be respected in order to shape the Christian community faithfully. And to do this, I want to just use this example of 1 Peter for us, that we look at these first few verses, the first few words of the first verse in 1 Peter, which simply reads, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ. This will be our example of learning to discover the meaning and application of the Bible. To us, if we're fresh with the Bible, newcomers to the Bible, we might pick up 1 Peter and read those words, and they may not immediately mean an awful lot to us. I get that. That was true of me as well. There was a point in time where I had to read the Bible for the first time as well and try and figure out what it means and how to apply it to my life. So there's no shame in that. We all have some learning to do. What I want to tell you this morning is that these words, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, is a greeting to a letter to Christians who lived in what is now modern-day Turkey. This is a greeting from a man named Peter. And these Christians in what we now call modern-day Turkey, they were a persecuted minority. They weren't the flavor of the month. They were a persecuted minority. According to one source, the Christians to which Peter wrote, who first received this letter, were marginalized as weirdos who suffered shame, discrimination, mockery, half-truths, lies, vicious rumors, slander, harassment, abuse, economic persecution, rejection, and even perhaps on occasion mob violence, all on account of being followers of Jesus. That was life for them. it was hard going to be a follower of Jesus for them. So finding a church leader who had something trustworthy and true to say about God and grace in the midst of a very difficult life was a prized possession. To find someone who would just help and encourage with something true and good to say about God was worth seeking out. After all, when we go through tough seasons of life, the last thing that we find truly helpful are trite answers to our complex situations, right? So reading last night of a man in hospital, tubes sticking out of every part of his body virtually, and saying to a friend of his, if one more person comes to me and tells me to drink apple cider vinegar, I'm going to scream. Apple cider vinegar is not going to fix these tubes and these tumors. Light and trite answers are infrequently the help we need when life is difficult and complex. So we want to remain respectful and mindful of this historic dynamic. When we read a letter like 1 Peter, we want to be aware what the people themselves suffered through. That life was tough, and so there's a meaning behind this letter, a reason for writing. And these first readers were persecuted Christians looking for what is trustworthy and true rather than what is trite and light in order to shape their Christian life and experience. So getting our heads into the historical context is one step we take as a Christian community in order to discover the meaning and application of a particular passage in the Bible. As we take this step together in our passage, we actually find the name of the author. We find out who wrote this letter. Why does this matter, you ask? Why does it matter if we know who wrote what letter of the Bible? Why should we care? Well, for one, it shows us there's a real historical person behind the letter. A real person of real history with a real story of God's grace in his life that he wants to share with his readers. It's not the letter, 1 Peter, it's not just a piece of paper that floated along the street and someone picked up and thought, hey, this will make a fine addition to our Bibles. It was written by a real person who knew Jesus. And so he extends the help that he once received to others. So reading our Bibles well, begin with this prayerful quest together. We want to be mindful of the contextual roots of the Bible in each book of the Bible that we read. Who was the writer? Why were they writing? Who were the recipients? And what was life like for them? When you pick up the Bible and you begin to ask these questions of a text, of a passage, and you say, man, why is it this way? Why did the writer bother with this community of Christians? You start to make an effort towards putting yourself in these people's shoes. You try to begin to imagine yourself receiving this letter and seeing life through their eyes and then seeing why it really matters to you. So this morning I'm asking you to imagine yourself in the shoes of these first Christians who received Peter's letter. These people, these Christians who face persecution, imagine yourself, the people in your neighborhood and in your places of work called you out as a marginalized weirdo. You suffered shame and discrimination and mockery and half-truths and lies and vicious rumors and slander and harassment and abuse and economic setbacks and rejection and perhaps even from time to time, the mob violence invaded your life, all on account because you followed Jesus. rather than the imperial cult of your times. Imagine what it's like to wake up like that day after day. And people are just going to slam you all day long. And then one weekday, as is your practice as a Christian, you gather with other Christians who too have come to worship Jesus together. And that one weekday, as you gather in your church community to have your faith shaped and refined by the means of God's grace, someone says, look, this week we got a letter. We got a letter from an apostle named Peter. Some of us know him. We know that he was one of Jesus' disciples. Some of you probably don't. You're new to Christian life and faith. But he's written to us, and let's read his letter together and see. Let's see what hope and help he has for us as a persecuted minority in our neighborhoods and places of work. Apparently, Peter has something trustworthy and true to say to these kinds of Christians. But then, perhaps, as this letter is received and someone endeavors to read it, you are new to Christian life and faith and you don't know Peter personally. Others vouch for him, but you're skeptical. You have a cynical disposition. And you start to ask yourself, could Peter possibly understand? Could this Peter possibly understand the difficult life you face as a follower of Jesus? Does he know what it's like to live my life? Why should I pay attention to his letter? Does he really get the persecuted life and the extraordinary grace that is needed to live such a life? Or is he just another writer peddling this light and trite Christianity that you have grown tired of? The well-wishes and cultural cliches in the midst of the horrors that you face day in and day out. Is he just another one of those authors that are just going to write to you and say, hey, it'll all be okay? Or does he have something deeper, something more true and trustworthy to say about your difficult situation? That kind of cynicism has no exaggerated possibility, right? That some of us come to the Bible with deep cynicisms, that it has anything relevant, true, and trustworthy for us and our lives. Many people have drawn this conclusion out about the Bible, mainly because people have become suspicious of the Bible being quoted to them over the years out of context. A verse here, a verse there. Well-intentioned, but misguided. Misapplied truths, treating the Bible with less care and attention than you would a typical movie experience. And that has left many of us wondering if the Bible has anything coherent or true to offer us. Which is why you will notice that here at Grace, we regularly take moments in our preaching ministry to keep in mind the doubts and cynicisms that some of us, our friends and our neighbors, have about the Bible. We give a little bit of time to unpack some doubt or some cynicism that people bring about the particular passage that we're preaching from. Because many people are disillusioned by the frequency with which the Bible has been misused in their lives. So with these doubts and cynicisms in mind, we want to ask, is there any hope of regaining some sense of confidence in the Bible? Can we regain a sense of confidence when our cynicisms run so deep? Can we see the Bible afresh, not as a random collection of verses, but a unified collection of books, each with its own story, with its own history, with context and humanly relatable roots, which shape a faithful Christian community? By digging into these first few words of Peter's letter, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, I believe we can gain fresh confidence in the Bible and perhaps extend to Peter the benefit of the doubt that he has something true and trustworthy to say about facing persecution on account of faith in Jesus Christ. So who was Peter, we might ask? Who was Peter? Why should we regard him as someone with something true and trustworthy to say about life as a persecuted minority Christian on account of following Jesus? In the books that we call the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the first four books of our New Testament, no other person apart from Jesus receives more attention than this person, Peter. No other person gets more time on paper than Peter apart from Jesus. And from those Gospels, we know Peter worked a regular blue-collar job. He worked a get-your-hands-dirty kind of job as a fisherman. He was raised Jewish by virtue of his ethnicity and religion. We know that he was married and that he had a brother named Andrew. In fact, everything that we know about Peter from just even a cursory look at the Gospels, he seems like the kind of guy that many of us would enjoy hanging out with, that we'd want to invite over for a bit of a barbie and get to know. He's an honest, good-hearted guy, works an honest job, keeps up with his siblings. Has a wife. I'd like to get to know him, I think so. And in time, this sibling of his brother Andrew, introduced him to this Rabbi Jesus. His brother Andrew is the instrument of his attachment to Jesus. And as things transpired after their introduction, Peter ended up becoming one of his most trusted friends. He became one of Jesus' most trusted allies, forming part of this inner circle of disciples, that among the 12, there were three inner, well-loved disciples, and Peter was one of them, a trusted ally in the inner circle of Jesus. But we know a lot more about Peter, too, than just these positive aspects of his life. You see, as we read the gospel accounts, we find Peter to be a well-intentioned but often misguided and impulsive individual. We might call him a bit rough around the edges. Let me give you an example. At one point, Jesus was teaching his disciples and he began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things. And Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Far be it from you, Lord, this shall never happen to you." So there's this time, right? This impulsive Peter trying to boss Jesus around. "Jesus, you reckon this is going to happen? No way, not on my watch." He's just impulsive this way. Well-intentioned man, sincere, but misguided. That was just part of his character. It's a character trait that comes through time and time again. We also know that Peter was a courageous man. Courageous man. He was willing to muscle up and defend Jesus by force. On the night Jesus was betrayed, Peter drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear in the name of defending Jesus by force. Again, we come to recognize Peter as a well-intentioned but often impulsively misguided individual. To top things off, the Bible also recalls what many consider to be Peter's most significant failing as a disciple of Jesus. He betrayed his friendship with Jesus. Choosing to deny Jesus, in spite of having been one of his closest and most well-loved allies. All this is to say that a cursory reading of the gospel show us who Peter was, warts and all. It's not trying to paint you a perfect picture of a superhuman. He's an ordinary man with character flaws and needing oodles of grace in his life like we all do. Unrefined and imperfect, needing the grace that Jesus offers. And this grace Peter received. You see, though Peter was impulsive and misguided, and then ultimately disavowed his friendship with Jesus, the grace Jesus extended to him meant that these shortcomings of Peter, his denial of Jesus, his impulsive nature, his misguided words to Jesus, these things, these great flaws of his, were not the final word over his life. They were not the final memory by which Jesus would recall him. You see, Peter experienced transformative grace from Jesus. Jesus made this explicit after his own resurrection, where Jesus cooked Peter, who only a few nights before betrayed their friendship, right? Says, I don't know the guy at all. Imagine a dear friend saying that to you. I don't know that person at all. He had just denied this most precious of friendships. And there he finds Jesus, who he had just denied, cooking him a lakeside breakfast. And he receives the warm welcome of Jesus, who doesn't hold his betrayal against him. And he says to Peter these following things, calling him by his other name that he is known, Simon. Simon, son of John. Do you love me more than these? And Peter said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, feed my lambs. Jesus said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, tend my sheep. Jesus said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him a third time, do you love me? And he said to Jesus, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. What words of grace, man. What an outpouring of grace from Jesus to a man who had just betrayed him. To not only welcome him with arms of love, and not hold his worst impulses and failings as an imperfect disciple against him, and to give him life-transforming grace, and by those words of grace to commission him to a role of leadership amongst the yet-to-begin Christian communities called churches. Peter was to be their pastor, their shepherd, and the carer for God's people. He was to feed these lambs as Jesus regards his followers. He was to tend them tenderly. This was to be Peter's new trajectory of life, the grace that he received from Jesus. Now, why does that matter when we come to read a letter like 1 Peter? Why does it matter that we recall this history about Peter the author? It's crucial because as great and glorious as this newfound hope and the purpose and outpouring of grace which he received from Jesus, Peter entered that pastoral ministry to which Jesus charged him under the shadow of foreknowing his own death would come at the hand of violent persecutors. Peter knew that he would not die peacefully at home, surrounded by family. Jesus went on to say to Peter, "Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go." And this he said but to show by what kind of death he was going to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to Peter, "Follow me." It's this detail that helps cynics and doubters who ask whether Peter has anything relevant, trustworthy, or true to say to a community of persecuted Christians about life as a persecuted Christian. You see, he does have something true and relevant to say. He has deep and experiential knowledge of what it's like to face and stare at persecution. And as such, he offers them no trite or light advice for their Christian life. He doesn't hold out to them, "Everything's going to be okay, drink your apple cider vinegar" answers. Because he himself knows what it's like to prepare himself for the violence which he will experience at the hands of others for the sake of following Jesus. It requires more than light and trite. It requires trustworthy and true to get through a difficult season like that. So this gives us historical context and humanly relatable roots to the books of the Bible. And when we respect these contexts, when we respect these humanly relatable roots, we are better equipped to understand these letters in the Bible as the way of shaping a Christian community. I've taken time this morning to just briefly look at the background information about Peter's life when we read Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ. We are introduced not just to a name, but to a person with deep experiential knowledge of life with Jesus. It might have seemed odd to some of you to linger on this for a whole sermon, to consider an author and to consider his experience with Jesus, his historical context, his failings, and the grace that he received. But in doing so, it helps us to treat Peter's letter, indeed any letter in the Bible, and the Bible as a whole, with at least as much care and attention as we would our movies. And then as we put these things into practice, this respect for history, this respect for context, this respect for humanly relatable roots, and we gain skill and confidence and love for the truth, Our hope is that we will treat the Bible with far greater care and attention than we do our movies. Let me close with this. Maybe it's the first time you've given thought to the books of the Bible having historical context. Maybe it's the first time that that thought's crossed your mind, that the Bible has historical context and humanly relatable roots. And maybe you've given up on the Bible, given up on the Bible as a true and trustworthy word for shaping Christian community. If that's where you found yourselves, if that's where you find your thinking, see again that you are greeted by the words of a man, a real man in real history who knew Jesus and looked to Jesus for hope and help. And he encourages others to do the same.